Accession number 21024, Reel 1.
Doug Lakey, Reel 1. Where were you born, please?
I was born in Warminster.
Which year was this?
1920.
Did both your mother and father come from Warminster?
No, my mother was in the outlying countryside. She was born. My father was a Plymouth man.
What did he do for a living?
He was a railwayman.
Did you go to school in Warminster?
Yes.
Which one was that?
I went to the Minster School and Sanborne School.
And how old were you when you finished your schooling?
14.
So we're talking about 1934.
That's right.
Did you get a job?
Yes. I worked part-time for a news agent, a lady who was widowed, and I went to work for them full-time when I left school.
And what job were you doing when war was declared?
I was running the actual business.
Did you join TA before the war?
No.
Did you hear Neville Chamberlain declare war on Germany?
Yes, I did, yes.
Under what circumstances?
I think we were just listening to the radio. I think we'd been warned there was something special coming, and never forget his voice that day.
What were your feelings about the news?
Well, I didn't think myself that we should be appeasing Germany in the first place. On the other hand, had I known the situation we were in, I would have understood his reasons.
Did the war affect you at first?
No.
When did it start to affect you?
Not until I was called up.
Did you join the LDV before the war?
No. I was running the business. I had no time for such things.
Was there any bombing in Warminster before you joined up?
No. We saw plenty of the raids on Bristol. We saw the planes going over for the raids on Bristol in the early part of the war. But we didn't have anything. We had the odd bomb drop in the countryside when bombers unloaded when they were going back, having been unsuccessful.
When was it you were called up?
1940. I believe it was May or June 1940.
Can you tell me the procedure you went through once the letter arrived, please?
Well, we registered at the local labour exchange originally, and then we were called up. We were told to go to Bath for a medical. And I went to Bath and was passed A1. And the next proceeding was the call-up papers coming for me to report to the advisors to the Wiltshire Regiment. And I joined the whole load of recruits who were billeted in Devizes Castle, in which we spent 4 months... 4 months training with no weapons, other than we had one Bren gun, which was being taught us. But we used pickhouse for drills and such like. It wasn't until we were posted to the barracks in Devizes and joined the company that we were given rifles.
What did you think of the training that you received?
The training we received was very good. I realised later, especially, the weaponry training and everything was first class. Physical training. We were very fit, and yes, it didn't do us any harm at all.
How did the people in charge of the training treat you?
Well, that was a bone of contention. We were being trained by old soldiers who'd come back from India and places like this, and they were, to me, a lot of them were illiterate, and it annoyed me to be shouted at by someone who who was so illiterate, and I think this was a bone of contention throughout with the recruits coming up, because a lot of them were very well educated people, and they were being shouted at by these sergeants and sergeant majors who'd only known the army in India and places like this and used to having all their own way.
Was this type of treatment necessary, do you think?
Not at all, no. I mean, the stupidity of the, even with the officers, with the barrack rooms, we polished our barrack rooms that we couldn't wear a pair of boots in them. We walked up and down in socks. We whitewashed the coal. We scraped the handles of the shovels and such like with razor blades to get them white for CO's inspection. We put boards in our blankets to make them look square when they were folded up. And all this was very necessary, or you were for the high jump.
Did you get punished?
No, I didn't get punished for anything of that. I did get punished once for being absent without leave when I was at Maidstone with the 5th Wilts. Sergeant Major, I was booked in for Christmas leave and had been promised Christmas leave, and the Sergeant Major had a bit of a barney with me a few weeks before, and out of spite he stopped my Christmas leave and said, "I'm sending you on leave 2 weeks before." And I was so annoyed, I looked up to him and I said, "Well, if you send me, I shan't come back." And he just laughed at it, and I was determined. So when I went, I took my leave, and then I stayed over Christmas and went back just afterwards.
What did you get for
that? I got 7 days in the guard room it was there then. But
what did that involve?
Only doing fatigue duties and such like, nothing very onerous. And as soon as I came out of jail, as I called it, they gave me promotion.
So from Devizes you went to Maidstone?
No, Devizes, first of all I went to Gloucester with the Gloucesters. We were driving commandeered Royal Blue buses transporting troops. And I spent about 6 weeks there and then was posted to Newport Docks to join the Welsh Borderers, and was firefighting on the docks. We were doing, we had manual fire engines, but we were all trained to fight the fires when the incendiaries dropped on the docks at Newport.
Any details you can give me about that?
Well, we didn't get a lot. We had some night raids when incendiaries were dropped on the docks, and we didn't have any really big fires. We just raced and put them out, but really we didn't do a great lot while we were there.
How accurate was the German bombing?
Not very.
So they didn't hit the docks?
Not very much, no. The odd stray one, but they were dropping all around.
You mean you were putting incendiaries out in houses?
No, in the docks itself. In the buildings on the dock.
What else do you remember from this time?
Well, from there, I thought that was a reasonably quiet time down there, and then I was posted to the 5th Wilts at Maidstone. And we were camped in Autumn Woods near Maidstone, and I was training there with the signal section, and I did courses from there on tank driving in Kirkcudbright and Bren gun carrier maintenance in Park Royal, and tank training at Findon, which was very interesting.
Why was it so interesting?
I enjoyed the tank driving and Bren carrier driving. I enjoyed the Bren carrier very, very much.
So this was the 5th Wilts?
5th Wilts, yes.
Which battalion of the South Wales Borderers had you been with at Pembroke Docks?
I can't remember now. I don't know which one it was. I got a feeling it was the fifth, but I'm not 100% certain.
Any incidents that happened to you at Maidstone?
Not really. It was very hard training. Very hard training. We did a number of 40-mile route marches and such things as that. In fact, we did one 40-mile route march, which Montgomery said we were to exist on one packet of chewing gum for the 2 days we were covering it. And we reach issue with one packet of spearmint chewing gum, and woe betide anyone that tried to get food from anywhere else. But I well remember coming back off these route marches with the sort of blood running out of your boots where your heels had blistered and burst, and we were back for foot inspections immediately afterwards. And then the medical MO would decide whether you were fit for duty or excuse boots for a couple of days.
Did you stick to the instructions about not eating?
Yes. Had no other chance.
Couldn't you forage from the land?
Well, there wasn't very much to forage in Kent at that time. Everywhere there were troops, and we were confined to under the NCOs in charge of us most of the time.
How did Monty come into this?
He gave this order that the troops were to be hardened. Yes, it was hardening us up for the battle conditions we were supposed to meet when we got to wherever we were going for the invasion.
Was Monty our divisional commander or something?
He was commander of all British troops at that time, and he gave these orders out for this hard training.
What do you remember happening next?
The next thing my brother claimed me out of the regiment to go to the 112 Field Regiment, who were stationed in Broadstairs, in the same division. They were in the same division, the 43rd Wessex. And I joined them in 1942. I went there primarily as a gunner, but after being interviewed by the battery commander of 217 Battery, that was Major Maxwell Hislop, he said, because of my training with Bren carriers and signals, he would like me to be his OP driver and assistant, to which I readily agreed, not knowing what it entailed. And I did that same job then for consecutive battery commanders, and all the time from the time we went over into Normandy till the war finished.
How did you feel about transferring from infantry to artillery?
I was thrilled about that because I thought I was getting out of these 40-mile route marches. This was the main contention. I didn't particularly want to leave my friends, but I didn't enjoy the route marches with the infantry, and I thought I could do something a bit more useful. It was much more technical, the job I was going to do in the artillery than it is in the infantry.
Can you take me through the details of what the job involved, please?
Well, the job as an OPAC is your assistant to the battery commander, and you are the forward spotters for the battery, wherever they may be, and you go forward with the infantry, and you control all the fire from the battery in support of that infantry, whichever one it is. I mean, in Normandy, we supported the Lowland Division, the Highland Division, the Guards Armoured, the Household Cavalry, the Dorsets, the Wilts, but mainly the 7th Hampshire Regiment. We were attached to their HQ most of the time, but if another battalion was going into an attack from, say, the Dorsets or whatever they are, we would be sent to them to go with them. So we were constantly in the front spotting for these people. We had to see our targets. And if they came under heavy fire, we tried to control this by plastering it with a stunk target or something.
So you went forward in a lorry, you mean?
We had a Bren carrier track vehicle, which we used. Unfortunately, a Tiger tank took a dislike to my Bren carrier in Normandy and blew it to pieces. And after that, I had a number of different vehicles until they were able to give us another one. We had an American half track, which was too noisy for the job we were doing. We had a converted tank, which was again too cumbersome and too heavy for the job we were doing, because lots of times we would go forward from infantry front lines and sit ourselves out in perhaps 300 or 400 yards out into no man's land in different spots, trying to pick out targets that we could see. So these vehicles, when we had the tank, etc., we could only go so far, then we would have to go on foot and run a landline out.
So how many of you would go forward as part of the OP party?
Oh, usually three of the four. On the OP party was the battery commander, myself as the NCO, and the senior signaller, who was a gunner. And the other signaller stayed with the vehicle, taking any radio messages. But usually when we went out into no man's land, we laid a landline out, because our signals could be picked up too easily if we were transmitting with radio once we got out there. But many times the signallers had to follow the line in the dark where it's been cut by a shell for or something and repair it. He was a very good lad. He got mentioned in dispatches in the end, a chap named Ginger Whitfield. But he was an absolute top signaller and a good chap to be with throughout the whole campaign.
So when you first got this job, where was it? Where was the unit?
In Broadstairs. We trained in Broadstairs and in the Kent countryside, and from there we moved to a village called Monjum near Deal. We spent some months there, and we were manning observation posts around the coast from Ramsgate, and each night the OP party slept at Ramsgate in an old hotel there. In case of invasion, we had targets set up which we would control, but we drifted off each night and slept in a hotel, empty hotel in Ramsgate. From there, we moved to Eastbourne, and it was from Eastbourne that we were dispatched to Normandy. We went to London, and in the I believe it's King George Dock in London, and that's where we sailed from.
Can you take me through the sequence of events from there, step by step, in as much detail as you can remember, as they affected you, please?
What, you mean going to Normandy?
Yes, please.
Well, we went to London, and we saw the first buzz bombs, as we called them, coming over. We thought they were planes on fire when the first ones came over, and that was the first time anyone had any in London, and we were amazed when we were told that there was a new weapon of terror that they were using from the continent. From there, we sailed to Normandy. I believe it was about the 11th of June, and we were caught in a gale off the coast of Normandy. And we couldn't land. We were tossed in the sea for 4 or 5 days. Everyone was violently sick, and we couldn't eat anything, and we couldn't do anything at all but lay about and be sick for 5 days. We were being constantly harassed by the odd fighter plane coming over, and also the ship carrying the Dorset Regiment, I believe it was sunk by a mini submarine while we were being tossed about offshore, and there were many casualties there. But we finally landed as it calmed down, and we went to a holding area near Bayeux, and that's where we were organized for our role in the invasion.
What did that organization involve?
Well, the setup, first of all, we were told actually then what was going on and where the positions were and such like, and we did little bar get ourselves ready, get all our equipment ready for a couple of days, and then on our first big action came on July the 10th. We'd been scouting around days before that, and we had little skirmishes, but on July the 10th, one of the biggest attacks of the war were to go in to capture Hill 112 in Normandy. And our role was to support, first of all, two regiments who were going to capture two villages. And our final objective was the village of Malto, or Maltot, whatever, how you pronounce it in French, M-A-L-T-O-T, in Normandy. And we were on the start line. We were to start at 5 in the morning. We all had blackened faces, and we went off with a regiment of Dorsets or Somersets. One was doing one village, one the other. And we were going through waist-high corn, and we encountered a number of snipers and such like in the corn, but nothing which the infantry didn't mop up very quickly. There were casualties on both sides, but they took the first two villages with relative ease, and then the Hampshire Regiment were to go through and capture Malto. And unfortunately, they were a bit disorganized, because on the race towards the village, we were the forward at OP, and we were with the forward infantry, and looked round, and there was a headquarters of the 7th Hamps nearly upside us with Colonel Ray. But they didn't seem to... They'd got disorganized, there's no doubt about that, but they were still a good fighting force. But unfortunately, this was a trap set by the German panzers regiment for us to go into Malto, and they were all waiting there with dug in Tiger tanks, and it was literally a slaughter as soon as we got there. We were completely encircled, and there was nothing anyone could do. One or two of the Hampshire tied white handkerchiefs to their bayonets and waved them, but I heard Colonel Ray shout, "I will shoot any man myself waving a white flag," but I don't think he would have done, but this was his idea. But the next minute he was killed himself. Well, he was mortally wounded. He was stood a few yards from me when he was mortally wounded.
What did you see of that?
What did I see of his...
When he was mortally wounded?
Well, I saw them quickly carry him away. How they got him out, I don't know, but he got back to England and he died. But we were so concerned with ourselves. We had a Bren gun on our truck, and ample ammunition, as we thought. And we just positioned the carrier on top of a ditch, and the signalers were filling the magazines as I was using the Bren gun to fend off infantry coming towards us from the other side. I had a sergeant signaler with me that day, a chap named Phil Keynes, and an incendiary set the carrier on fire. We carried a ladder over the top of the truck on a bracket, and so some of our bedding and such like was all on there, and this was all ablaze, and the whole truck was going to go up, and Phil was trapped in the carrier, and I was firing the Bren gun. I could see these infantry coming towards us in the front about 150 yards away, and I saw them coming up the hedgerow, and I shouted to Phil, I said, when I stop firing, jump out and get round this side. And we gave them a good old burst, and they all ducked and got in the down behind the hedge, and he jumped out and got away. But the next minute, I suddenly heard a rumbling behind me and looked round, and there was a huge Tiger tank coming through the hedge about 100 yards away with his gun pointing straight at us. It was only me there, the others had gone by then. I'd run out of ammunition, I'd thrown the Bren down, and this tank, I could see, was going to blow our carrier up, so I went flat on the ground, and it put an armor-piercing shot right through my carrier, and it went just above my backside when I was laid on the floor, and the splinters from the shell as it hit the steel peppered my backside with all little steel splinters. And the effect of that was so painful, I jumped up and ran. And in the next field, there were a lot of dugouts with little wooden tops and turves over them, which the Germans had constructed for a defense. And I got into one of them, and there were two other chaps in there. And we sat there, and then we heard the German infantry coming, and we could hear their thundering of their feet as they were running. And they were riddling all these dugouts with machine guns as they came across. So we thought, this is our lot, and we shook hands and said, we'll see you up there. But fortunately, they ran right across top of ours and didn't fire into it. We heard their boots go across the top, but they didn't fire into us. And we stayed there for about 4 hours. We were well behind German lines then, until the 4th Dorsets launched a big counterattack to try and extricate the Hampshires. But there were so few of the Hampshires left, I think there was about 160 were eventually got back out of nearly 800. And when we heard the tanks, we poked our heads in and saw it was our own lots, and we ran towards them. And I met again my commanding officer that day was a chap named Lieutenant Blinko, who was an Oxford Blue. And he and I were explaining to a tank commander where these German positions were, and the next minute a shell landed practically on him and blew him all to bits, and we never saw any more of him. And the Dorsets were beaten back with very heavy casualties, and I walked 6 or 7 miles back to my unit. I kept inquiring where they were, because it was nearly all 43 Diveren that way, and I found them eventually. And I remember getting back there with a sore backside, and the MO, the medical team, when I got back, I was bent over double, and they were pulling bits of steel out of my backside with a pair of tweezers. But it was a horrendous day, and it was the worst day of the war for the Hampshire Regiment, I'm sure.
What effect did all that have on you?
I dreaded the fact of going back to capture Malta again, and I knew jolly well that we would have another go in a short while. And I just didn't want to go back to Malta. But fortunately, we were not engaged in the big attack when it went in and finally took it. And Hill 112, it was all part of capturing Hill 112 in Normandy, which was a very prominent hill and very important. But one never forgets a day such as that, and you count every day as a bonus. There's no question about that. But my commanding officer, who rolled with the tanks that day, I understand. I didn't know at the time, but he was in the attack, but he got back as well. But he was killed 2 days afterwards. He was killed on the 13th. That was Captain Cash, who was the father of Bill Cash, the MP.
How incapacitating were your wounds?
Didn't excuse me any duties. No, I was able to continue as such when